It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. You are very welcome on this bright and breezy and all other pieces of weather day. We're going to get a bit of hail before the day is out. We're seeing, I'm looking at our Facebook comments. Liam Ferry says, you're missing a great morning for a walk, Donal. Thank you, Liam. I was out there at 6:30, I am glad to say. So I've had my walk in, which means once this is finished and I've got all my bibs and bobs done, I can enjoy a nice leisurely and calorific lunch, safe in the knowledge that I've had my stroll already today. And also hello to Annie and to Mary and to Paul and to Audrey, all of whom have been commenting and saying hello on our Facebook pages. Now, we have a very special guest in studio, a man I have had the pleasure of doing a few charity things with over the years, particularly in support of Good and New, and a man for whom I have a huge amount of regard. Hugh McLean, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal.
Hugh, it's lovely to see you. Anyone who's looking at their Donegal News today will see a lovely article by Dermot Doherty. 60 years in the business.
Yes, I can't believe it. 60 years. Crazy. But I did start in April 1963 with Willie Ponsonby and his band. And I remember the first night was in the North Star Ballroom in Carrigart. And I couldn't believe that was me into show business. Mm-hmm. From then on till now, I haven't been more or less idle.
Yeah, and you've played with some of the fairly big show bands over the years as well. I mean, you've played with the High Avons, you've played with Evelyn and the Envoys. I mean, you know, you are the Mighty Avons, sorry, not the High Avons. But yes. I mean, you've been up and down the country, the county and the country.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, up and down like a gypsy from Cork to Donegal or Kerry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've played in every county in Ireland.
Oh, you must have done.
Certainly done back in the 60s.
And those two were the days. It's funny, I was looking at a U2 itinerary from a tour poster from 1980, which was the first year I saw U2.
Yes.
And the crazy thing about it was, obviously, whenever they got a gig, they said yes. And when you looked at the tour, it was like Monday, Newry, Tuesday, Limerick, Wednesday, Dundalk, Thursday, Cork, Friday, Dublin, Saturday, Waterford, Sunday, Belfast. I mean, they could be doing 200 miles in a day. And there was no planning. And I'm sure it was the same with yourselves.
It was the same. The management was in Dublin and all they did was lift the phone and do it. We were in Cork one day and we were in Malinhead the next day.
Well,
that was up and down.
It worked like this. Yeah. Hello, Mr. Promoter. Are the band available? Will you give me money? Yes, they're available.
That's exactly
it. And then the next question asked was, where is it?
Where is it? That's exactly it. Mm. That's the way it was, Donald. We weren't consulted as to about how many miles we would have to drive and so on. We usually finished one gig about 2 in the morning.
Yep.
And there was a hotel somewhere near and we stayed there and we headed to the next gig. The next stage.
And I heard this before, that there is a network of little B&Bs or guest houses across the country that cater for bands like that. So there's a network that will allow check-in at 2 o'clock in the morning and give breakfast at 12 midday before you hit the road.
Yeah, that's right. We had to have a special deal because we wouldn't be getting in until 3 in the morning maybe. Yeah. And we certainly wouldn't be getting up before 11 o'clock, say.
And basically it's... And I'm sure it wasn't a luxury tour bus with built-in toilets and all the facilities. I'm sure you were all in the back of an escort van, probably.
It was an old transit van, usually. Yeah. And the hotels, most of them weren't five-star hotels.
Yeah, so you're coming out of a not five-star hotel. you're getting into a van and driving maybe 200 miles up a road that is most assuredly not a motorway.
That's for sure. There wasn't very little at that stage. There was very little in the line of motorways. Very, very few of them. Mm. And you were driving at night a lot.
Oh yeah,
because you were, you know. So it was a hectic, and it wasn't as great in the life as most people thought the show band life was.
And I think, you know, I remember I heard someone involved in music saying that, you know, they said our life is 22 hours of hell and 2 hours of magic.
The easy bit was on the stage.
Oh, yeah. And that's the bit. Yeah, that's always it. You know,
that's it.
you know, on the stage, it's great. You've got a crowd in the palm of your hand. You're on top of the world. It's absolutely wonderful when you're on the stage. And that's the point they were making. Two hours of magic, 22 hours of hell. And you know, I'm sure you that point, it's going to resonate with you.
That's it. That's whoever said that was fairly close to the truth, I'll tell you. Because that's we spent most of our time travelling. And not a while out of time on the stage, but the stage bit was the easy bit.
Yeah.
Because we had roadies now to set up the gear and everything for us. But the actual plane was great. Mm. But it's just that it was in Cork 1 minute and the next night it was in Wexford and so on.
If I went back to you in 1963 and said, Hugh, I can offer you a choice. I can offer you this life that you're going to have for the next 60 years, or I can offer you a really good job in a nice cushy situation where you're guaranteed a regular steady income and you live in comfort for the rest of your life. Would you have given it up?
Well, there you see, I wouldn't. Because at 18, I was raring to go musically. And, you know, that at that age, you just want to get out and play music. And to get paid for playing music was just brilliant. You know, I would have played for nothing, but I didn't let on.
Yeah. Because if you told them you could play for nothing, grand, they would have taken you up on that offer very quickly.
Yes.
In terms of, as you say, you started with Willie Ponsonby, then you played with the Blue Glows for a while. You made your first record in 1970. Now you're still in your mid twenties at that stage, so you know you're a recording artist in your mid twenties. You're on the circuit. You must have felt invincible.
We were 6 foot, maybe 10 foot tall and bulletproof.
Oh yeah,
we were invincible. It was great times, Willie retired temporarily and then Eamon took over the band and then they changed it to the Blue Glows some mid-60s, I'd say. And then we were in the Blue Glows then. But we used to have these ultraviolet lights up on the stage and we had these bright Bryan Island shirts on and they would shine up blue, glowing in the dark. And we'd switch off the other lights. And that's why the name...
The Blue Glows. Well, I remember the ultraviolet well. There was a time, and I'm old enough to have been going to discos in my 20s when an ultraviolet light in the club was all the rage.
Yeah.
Mind you, they were still called discos then. You know, you wouldn't call it a disco now. It's a club. But then it's interesting, in 71, Fergus Cleary is a man you've done an awful lot with over the years, but you and Fergus wrote the Finn Harp song.
Yeah, Fergus was playing in the band in the Blue Glows. Mm. And Eamon Ponsonby was a mad Finn Harp song fan. And he was at us for months to write a song about them. And we would say, oh, we'll get round to it yet. But we were in Kerrykeel and we got into this Katie Kelly's kitchen to have tea and sandwiches or whatever we were going to have before the gig. And he closed the door and he gave Fergus and me two pieces of paper and two pen.
Yeah.
You're not getting out till you write that song. So we looked at each other and we started, we better start writing here.
Yeah.
So we wrote the song and that was grand. And then about a week later we were in Dublin to record the song, the Finn Harp song. And I says to Fergus, where's the words, Fergus? No, Fergus says, you have the words. I thought I gave them to you. And none of us had the words. So while the boys were setting up the gear in the recording studio, myself and Fergus were starting
trying to remember what you'd written the previous week.
Write as much of the first one as we could remember, but it wouldn't been the same, I wouldn't think. Then we recorded, I sung the song, the boys played the music, and we left a bit of paper in the studio and I had to wait until the record came out to learn it. That was professionalism back then, don't
you? Yeah. And there was no such thing as a nice handy phone to keep a record of it in your pocket at that stage.
But it was a massive hit because the Finn Harps did very, very well that year and they're still singing at the matches yet. So that.
And it's a great legacy. I mean, you know, to go to Finn Park and, you know, and to hear the song being sung, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've been at games and people have been standing beside you and not having a clue who it was they were standing beside.
No, that's right. That is right. And there was my first venture into songwriting as well. And Fergus influenced me a good lot. Fergus was very good great wit.
And he still is. He still is.
Still
a great
is.
Man.
Right? We're in the vintage car club together now, and we have yarns every time around.
No doubt. Tell us about the event that's going to happen in the station house, because I know the Letterkenny Heritage Group is one, and I've done a few gigs for Johnny Joe McCollum over the years.
Yes.
With my friends in the ukulele orchestra. But I mean, you know, there's a special night taking place to mark your 60th anniversary, and that is going to be a very big night indeed, I'm sure.
It'll be a big night. If all my musician friends turn up, there'll be a massive crowd there because they're from everywhere. And Johnny, and I have to say, the Heritage Group do a great job in Letterkenny here, and so I was just pleased that they would recognise me and all, and so they just got this night together to honour me for 60 years in the music business.
Well, I know that Evelyn, who you've sung with an awful lot and you played with Evelyn in the Envoys, Evelyn had a special tribute night, was it last year?
She had, yes, yeah. I was at
and
that.
I've not, of course you were there.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Evelyn's going to be there with you this time around as well.
She is.
Because you have recorded with her the Together Again CD is one that yourself and Evelyn. How long ago is that now since you put that one together?
Oh, I can't remember now. It's a few years ago. Yeah. But we've done another one since there recently there. But it's released, but it's not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it begs the question. I mean, you know, if I were to say to you, how many albums have you actually released, recorded, or played on? Is it an actual figure you could even give? You've probably done so much over the years.
Around 15, 15 or 16 different albums, not to mention all the singles. When I was with the Mighty Avens, you'd do singles as well.
So, I mean, you know, people may not necessarily have seen you on Top of the Pops. You may not have necessarily been at the top of the charts, but over the course of that 60 years, I mean, it was a reasonable living, and to be able to make your living from music for that length of time, I'm sure, you know, was you know, a source of pride, because you're creating, you're making your money from effectively what you're creating. It's very much yourself that's actually making the music. You're not selling your wares to some other company. Well, you're doing it yourself.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's more or less a business, but we look at it more as a pastime. It's just great to be able to get paid for whatever you're doing and whatever music you can write and so on.
Yeah.
But I was number one on the charts in Ireland in 1976 with a little song called The Leprechaun. And I didn't want to record it. It was a wee bloody nursery rhyme type song, fiddly diddly. All the kids in the country were singing it, and I was on RTE television and RTE radio being interviewed, and Sunday World came up to Donegal to do a thing on it. And so with the odd time during that time, I had a number one.
Yeah. I mean, I would have been about 12 at that stage. Now, you know,
1976.
I think I remember. I would have been twelve.
Yeah,
and I think I just about remember the song actually.
Yeah, there you are.
But isn't before we go to a break, anyone who's watching us on Facebook Live or on our YouTube channel, and you can do so, of course, it's on our Facebook pages or YouTube, it's Highland Radio Ireland is the name of our channel there. They will notice, if they're watching very closely, that you've got a guitar in your hand. And it seems to me to be an awful shame to come in here with a guitar and not use it. So before we go any further, will you sing us a song?
I could sing a song, I don't know if it'll... Mike will pick it up or not.
The mic is picking that up beautifully.
Yeah, well,
I can confirm here.
I might do one from the. I have a new CD coming out, released on that night, Monday night again. So that's never been heard before. Got an old black shirt, fits me just fine. Like the way it feels, so I wear it all the time. Got an old guitar that won't ever stay in tune, but I like the way it sounds in a dark and empty room. Got an old pair of boots that fit my feet just right. I can work all day, go out and dance all night. I got an old used car that runs just like a top. get the feeling it ain't never gonna stop. Stuff that works, stuff that holds up, is the kind of stuff you don't hang on the wall. Stuff that's real, stuff you feel, is the stuff you always reach for when you fall. Got a pretty good friend who's seen me at my worst. Doesn't care if I'm a blessing or a curse. But he always shows up when the chips are down. And that's the kind of friend I like to be around. Got a woman I love, she's crazy and she paints like God. Got a playground sense of justice, she won't give odds. I've got a tattoo of her name right through my soul. And I think everything she touches turns to gold. Stuff that works, stuff that holds up, is the kind of stuff you don't hang on the wall. Stuff that's real, stuff you feel, is the stuff you always reach for when you fall. That's the stuff you always reach for when you fall.
That was superb. I have to say, Hugh, there's a professionalism, I think, among, shall we say, the more mature musicians and singers out there. There's a level of professionalism there that never leaves you. And that sounds, I suspect, as good as anything you ever sang.
Well, you can't get anything more mature than me.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm doing any sums. I'm not saying I'm doing sums, but you started when you're 18 and you're celebrating 60 years in showbiz, yes, which suggests to me you're 78, which, I mean, you know, that is phenomenal. I mean, I tell you who that reminded me of, actually, as I listened. I was very much reminded of another man who has sat in that chair and sung in this studio on a number of occasions, yeah, and who you've worked with over the years very much, and that's Brendan Quinn.
Oh yeah, Brendan. I played along with Brendan in the Evens for a while.
Yeah, and you know it's that, and Brendan is the same. It's that, you know, you know it's a voice that's been through the mill, and you know when you hear a voice like Brendan's and a voice like yours, I would add, you know that that's the voice of someone who's been there, done that, bought several T-shirts, and then went back and did more and bought even more T-shirts. I mean, you know that it's the sound of a man who has lived. And that life comes through the voice. And I think that there's something beautiful about that.
Oh, well, that's good. Brendan's also a left-handed guitar player. We're very few and far between.
Yeah.
And so when we were in the band together, when I was singing, he'd play my guitar. And when I was, and he was singing, I'd play my guitar as well.
Hugh, I'm going to take a very short break. Stick with us and we'll be back after these. Stuff That Works is the title track to a CD that's going to be released next week on Monday the 17th of April. Hugh playing a special show as part of the Letterkenny the Heritage Group shows that take place in the Station House in Letterkenny. Hugh's going to be playing there on next Monday night. A couple of comments coming in. Congratulations to Hugh on the great career. That comes from Hugh Brennan in Glenties. Hugh McLean was the best singer and musician I ever listened to, so says a caller. And he was the biggest star of his time, and in my opinion he still is.
Thank you very much.
And that's from Hugh's grand. No, it is, of course. I've been listening to Hugh McLean for years. I think he's amazing. He sang Seven Spanish Angels at my brother's funeral. What a voice. And that's from Bernie. And also, Yes. Also, we have wish you all the best and congratulations on a great career. Well done too on all the charity work, and that's from Anne Boner. And as I say, I know Hugh, you and I have done a few things over the years together for good and you for Eamon and Lynn down there, and that was always a pleasure to do that.
Yes.
Now, you're a man who has interests outside of music. You referenced already the vintage cars, and I see you occasionally driving that white Merc, a 79, is it?
1979.
And it's still one of the best looking cars in Letterkenny, it really is.
It's great, and that's when Mercedes looked like Mercedes. You wouldn't know the difference in the cars nowadays.
Yeah.
They don't have the character of the old cars.
Yeah.
And I'm in a vintage car club, and we have a lot of runs every week and do vintage shows as well. Yeah. It's all for charity. All vintage stuff is for charity.
Yeah, and presumably the fact that you're running that car on a day-to-day basis, you must be responsible yourself for a lot of the maintenance work as well. I mean, you must be doing that yourself.
Yes, there's no NCTs on cars that age. And so you just do your own maintenance and upkeep the thing. That's the way
and I presume, too, you must be fairly handy with a spanner and a screwdriver now at this stage yourself.
I have been known to screw an odd spanner around, and that's it. And in the garage, I think it's a leprechaun that's in my garage.
Yeah.
Because every time I leave down a spanner, 10 minutes later, I can't find it.
I know that the same guy must come into our house with the socks. But now it's at this stage that I should be saying something like, well, there's Hugh, you know, huge success, but he's always kept his feet on the ground. But no, you haven't.
No.
Tell us all about the flying.
I started in the 1970s hang gliding. There was a hang gliding craze in the 70s. And I bought a hang glider to learn to fly it, and flew all around the mountains and flew off Muckish and the Sunday World were up photographing it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then later on in the 70s, I started training to be a pilot, an airplane pilot, and in Eglinton. And I got my license around 1978, I think it was. So, and that was a British license, and that's for life. So mm-hmm. It's still valid, provided I pass the medical, you know. And I don't know, I've sold whatever planes I had, and my son's a pilot.
Yeah.
It's Hugh Junior, so he has a wee plane. And
how often do you get up these days?
Not that often. The weather's the big thing.
Yeah.
And Donegal weather's not great. But if there's a good day, you just drop everything what you're doing and you go for a run. Like,
and there is a little strip in Convoy that you use.
Out in Convoy. The Kilpatrick brothers have a nice trip out there and clubhouse and everything. It's great.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
A few more messages that are coming in. Welcome to Hugh. We remember seeing him in the Singing Kettle in Dunfanaghy.
Yes.
And that's a while ago now, I suspect. And also wishing Hugh many more years success from Alec, Anne and Sinead Black.
Oh, right. Well, Alec and Anne and Sinead are going to be there on Monday night too.
Yeah.
And they're good friends of mine, and that CD, that LP was recorded up.
I see stuff that works. I actually see that Alec recorded and produced it. So yeah, there. And that, I mean, the stuff that works, I mean, the title track you sang, a Rodney Crowell, Guy Clark song. I'm fascinated by some of the song choices here. Now, I haven't listened to the CD yet, but you're doing Leonard Cohen's So Long Marian. That's one of my favourite songs. I really want to hear your version of So Long Marian, because that is a great song. But it's nice to see a few of your own songs as well. The Place I Call Home, The Housewife, written by yourself. So, you know, you're still writing, you're still being creative, which is great to see.
The songs that I've written have been very... I wrote a song called The Hitchhiker back in 1986, and it was number one all over the country.
Yeah.
And I got a gold disc for it in 1988, I think it was. And then I had another gold disc in 1989. This long, you know. I think there was a radio station, and it was Donegal Community Radio.
Yeah, there was DCR. There was a couple of, shall we say, I mean, unofficial. Or as we called them at the time, the Pirates.
Yeah, and there's
a few Pirates. Oh, well, I mean, there's still a few of us in this building old enough to have started on the Pirates now, yeah.
There's lovely radio stations in Donegal, and they're all doing a great job, like Highland here. They're all getting the thing through to the public and playing the promoting the local artists, and they're all doing a good job, so And I'd like to get involved with the radio station. Mm.
A few more comments before I ask you to sing a final song and we say our goodbyes. Caller asking, where can I get Hugh's new CD? Now, you're launching it officially next Monday.
Yes.
And is it going to be on sale locally, or how can people...
It'll be on sale. The thing about it is, there aren't any record shops, Donal. Not in Donegal, anywhere is there a record shop where you can go and buy CDs.
Yeah.
It's just... Well, they'll be on sale different places, all right. And on Monday night, they'll be there in the station house.
So someone can go down to the station house on Monday night. Not only can they buy the CD, but they can get to see you there as well. And you'll be... it's admission free with light refreshments provided. So, I mean, you know, you can't get a better deal than that, in fairness.
Oh, it's a good deal, that.
It's a very good deal, in fairness. sounds as good as ever, Huey. Keep it going from your old friend, PB. I'm sure you can figure out who PB is.
Yes.
Congratulations, Huey, on 60 years in the music business, and that's from your younger brother, Liam.
Yeah, Liam. And Mavita, yeah. Good guitar player and singer, too, but he'll only sing when he's drunk.
Oh, well, that's... Wish you all the best from John Charles and Sally.
Oh, right. And
Huey, you played at my mum and dad's John and Betty Mangan's wedding over 50 years ago. That'd great
be
friends.
Gary, that wouldn't be... Would that be Gary?
I don't have a name on this, but you played with John and Betty's son. And I knew John and Betty very well,
and I did play at their wedding.
Yeah. Is that John that would have sold the Wheelchair Association?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have known John, yeah.
Wheelchair, he was sitting down the street.
Outside Dylan's and then outside the courtyard back in the day. Yeah, indeed, I remember John well. Congratulations to Hugh. I remember him learning the guitar.
Yes.
And that's from Desi Kelly, who isn't a young man either, but if Desi Kelly remembers you learning the guitar.
If he remembers me learning, he's a fair age.
He must be. Hugh, it's been absolutely lovely. Oh, and another one here. And this is, we'd like to wish you a very happy anniversary. Hope to see you on Monday. And this is from John, James and Anne at Cabrabrook in Trenton. Yes.
They're good friends of mine. Yeah.
And there will be, I have no doubt, it'll be standing room only, I suspect, in the station house on Monday. Yeah. Hugh, will you do one more song for us before you go?
Yeah. Right. It's hard to know which one to do. Uh-huh. Hand me over the CD.
Yeah, I'll just give that to you there now.
Because the memory is not great now.
Well, fair play. The first one you did, for a man of your age and experience and maturity, I'm not sure I can remember a song as well as you just did, being honest. And you have 18 years on. Well, you have 20 years on me.
The postman delivered a past due bill notice, and the alarm clock rang 2 hours late. The garbage man left all the trash on the sidewalk, and the hinges fell off of the gate. And this morning at breakfast, I spilled all the coffee and opened the door on my knee. But the last thing I needed, the first thing this morning, was to have you walk out on me. Last night you came home late, I knew you'd been drinking, by that old mellow look on your face. It doesn't matter, it's a holiday season, and you fill such a big empty space. And I lay down beside you, and I wanted your loving, 'cause your love makes my life complete. But the last thing I needed, the first thing this morning, was to have you walk out on me. So excuse me for looking like my whole world just ends, and excuse me for looking like I just lost my best friend. And excuse me for living and being forgiven. Just go on if you want to be free. But the last thing I needed, the first thing this morning, is to have you walk out on me. Yeah, the last thing I needed, the first thing this morning, to have you walk out on me.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful again. Hugh, it's been an absolute pleasure and a privilege to share this moment with you. Thank you so much for coming in. to make it 60 years in the music business and come out of it smiling. A man who obviously has got a huge network of friends. I mean, there's more comments coming in. I know that Dominic Friel and Jermaine Friel have both been watching on Facebook, and they both wish you well. And they're looking forward to seeing you. I know Jermaine certainly is hoping to be there on Monday night. And that's the Heritage Group hosting a special night in the Station House Hotel in Letterkenny, marking Hugh McLean's 60 years in the music business. It's on Monday night at 8 o'clock. And as I say, I strongly suspect it'll be standing room only. Hugh, it's been an absolute privilege and a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Donald. It's been a good crack.
That's good. And that's the main thing. And if the music isn't crack, then you're making a mistake somewhere. But you've provided 60 years of crack, Hugh. And as the man said, you haven't finished yet.
No, certainly not.
It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Really enjoyed that, actually. Hugh McLean celebrating 60 years in music and that special concert taking place in the Station House Hotel in Letterkenny on next Monday night. Congratulations, Big Hughie, from all your Black Murphy cousins here, there and everywhere. And good luck, Hugh, from all your friends at the foot of Muckish. Now, every day this week we have been speaking to a representative from one of the teachers' unions. We spoke to the TUI on Tuesday. We spoke to the INTO yesterday. And today we're going to go to the ASTI conference, which is taking place at the Clayton White's Hotel in Wexford. It's concluding later today. Pádraig Curley is a member of the Standing Committee for Donegal and Sligo with the ASTI, and he joins us on the line. Pádraig, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very, very well indeed. Pádraig, one of the issues being discussed at the ASTI conference has been the lack of psychological supports in schools, and you believing that's having a severe impact on many children's educational outcomes.
Absolutely, yeah. Special education needs has really become a huge area of concern for the teaching profession, because it, at the minute it's estimated that 25% or a quarter of the student cohort will be involved in this program in some needs. Basically, the supports in place are not fit for purpose at the minute. And there needs to be support with the individual education plans that these students may have written up. Some of them have complex needs, and there needs to be more NEPS psychologists brought on board to help schools to provide the services that these students deserve and really are crying out for.
Other issues include the issue of class sizes. Again, it's one that cropped up with Joanne from TUI. It also cropped up speaking yesterday to Anya from the INTO. No different for yourselves in ASTI?
Well, it's been highlighted, really, you know, that the OECD report basically has Ireland last 36 out of 36. So we're last in the class. We're the country that has been least supported in terms of investment in second level education, you know, as a percentage of our GDP. So if you see reports like that the OECD is saying that the Irish education system is the most underfunded education system in out of 36 countries, you know that there needs to be an improvement in that area. And all the while, we're among the top of the countries in terms of performance, attainment of students in our education systems, literacy and numeracy and all that. So it really is a testament to the nature of the Irish people, the teaching profession in Ireland, and I suppose the high value that our society holds on education is we're performing so well, yet are the worst funded, and that just tapers down into class sizes. So, for example, the OECD average is 23, the EU is 21 students. Our classes are regularly over 30 students, and of course this makes big has had big impacts recently with COVID, you know, isolation, keeping people in separate rooms. So there needs to be a lot more investment in terms of buildings, infrastructure, and resources. And remember, I mean, the system is becoming, there's more and more students entering it all the time. And all of this thing is leading to the other crisis at the moment, which is basically the teacher supply. So there's a lot of, I know that the department, in fairness to them, are looking big time at it. You know, looking at teaching as a career. You know, what would make it an attractive profession? Because now a lot of our graduates, they're not using teaching.
So that brings us then to the inevitable discussion on pay. It's been highlighted by the other teachers' unions as well. And the point they're making is that recruitment and retention crisis, pay has got to be one of the absolute key elements.
It's a lot more nuanced, though. I don't want your listeners to think that it's just basically, you know, teachers with pay. It's a lot more nuanced than that. It has to do with you know, job satisfaction. It has to do with how good the facilities are, how much support there are in it, the level of stress in it, the support that you get at various things, onerous paperwork, for example, that leads to nothing. And, you know, you need to take out things that are making it unattractive. The lack of promotion in the job is another thing. And, of course, you know, we acknowledge that urban centres, especially around like Dublin or large cities, the accommodation problem and the price of rent, and it affects everyone, but it is an issue as well. That's the issues. And, of course, the other thing then that we're looking at here at the conference as well is the whole new Leaving Cert reform. And, I mean, the ASTI wants to be a key developer in terms of having a progressive, fit-for-purpose, absolutely modern Leaving Cert. But what we've actually highlighted and called for is there needs to be a thorough longitudinal review and analysis of the recently introduced junior cycle.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's good elements to it, like everything else is bad. We're all taught now to be reflective practitioners. So those things need to be fixed in the junior cycle. So there's a lot of onerous things in the junior cycle. There's been a lot of talk here about the CBAs, you know, the classroom-based assessments. And there's two of those and an assessment task for every junior cycle student. And then you multiply that by 10 subjects. It's 20. That's 20 CBAs plus assessment tasks. So there's a possibility now that students are over-assessed. And this is directly leading to student stress. And, you know, which is ironic when one of the key elements of the junior cycle has been student well-being.
Yeah.
So these kind of things needs to be trashed out, developed, and hopefully going forward, then the mistakes that have been made in the junior cycle will not be made in the senior cycle review.
And the other issue is this creates a lot of extra bureaucracy for teachers and is just putting more pressure on them. And that was coming through as well from speaking to Joanne and Anya from the other two unions, that there is so much bureaucracy. There are so many circulars and memos and new responsibilities and new things to be getting involved in, that sometimes teachers haven't had the chance to actually sit back and assess where they are. And that's adding to the pressure on yourselves.
Well, the point is, I think, that a lot of people in the conference here, a lot of teachers said, teachers want to teach. They want to get, you know, help individual pupils. And if their time is being absolutely used up with paper, with huge, ever-increasing amounts of paperwork, form filling, assessments, so that you have the, you know, the I's dotted and the T's crossed, that time comes from somewhere. And it comes out of the direct help that students receive. So an education system that's absolutely chock-a-block with paperwork, it looks good from the document level and all that, but in terms of education, it's not a desired outcome. Now, of course, there's obviously fastidious reporting to be had and done on students, but I'm talking here about the burdensome type paperwork.
Pádraig Curley at the ASDI conference in Wexford. Thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
And can I just say one last thing? The Minister, Norma Foley, was here as well and was received very positively by the ASDI. And I have to say that came across very well, said she was going to listen to all the stakeholders, teachers, parents, students, and come up with a Leaving Cert reform that would be fit for purpose for the entire country. So that fills me with optimism and my colleagues here. So just want to say that to your
That's good.
Thanks very much.
It's a pleasure, Pádraig. Thank you. Pádraig Curley there in Wexford. We're going to take a short break back after these. Coming quite close to the end of the show, actually, just over 9 minutes left, but still a very important issue to discuss, and that's the issue of codeine and the availability of codeine over the counter in pharmacies. And we did have a discussion on this issue some weeks ago, actually, on the Wellness Wednesday spot in terms of the availability of certain drugs in pharmacies. And we have a tale, and that is the story of Laura. Laura died some time ago at University Hospital in Sligo because of the taking of painkillers that included codeine. We're joined on the line by her sister, Karina. Karina, good morning.
Hi, Donald. Good morning.
Karina, the story of what Laura endured and what your family has endured is one which needs to be heard. Tell us the background.
So Laura died in January 2022 due to... it was basically an overdose, long-term overdose of codeine products. She was addicted to using Nurofen Plus. This had its background in undiagnosed endometriosis and taking painkillers to cope with that. And then due to the codeine within the painkillers, she became addicted. And the ibuprofen in the painkillers then caused immeasurable damage to her stomach and her bowel and her organs, which ultimately caused sepsis. And Laura lost her life at just 39 years old last year.
We know the advice is that you wouldn't take something like Nurofen Plus for any more than 4 or 5 days without seeking medical advice. For how long had Laura been taking it?
Laura first took, we were aware of her taking codeine back around 2015. And then it appeared to subside. There was not much. We weren't seeing it. We weren't seeing the signs. In 2018, my dad suddenly passed away. My mum was re-diagnosed with cancer. We hit into COVID. My mum passed away in December 2020. And as far as I am aware, Laura started using the codeine again after that. After that, she was quite traumatised by that. And it was a coping mechanism. And it only took a year then for the medicines to take Laura's life.
As you said, she had undiagnosed endometriosis, and we know that endometriosis can be a very debilitating and painful disease, and sometimes it's a disease that is misunderstood and is not treated with the seriousness it deserves.
No, not at all. And there is no... that the medical profession have little understanding of it. Women are just being left to self-medicate. So this is something that is a real affliction for many women, and many women are self-medicating. Through speaking to people and other research I've done, that it's mostly women in Ireland that are afflicted with this particular addiction. Although it's right across the board, women will ultimately succumb to it because of gynecological and female and menstrual and menopausal pain.
Had Laura had the opportunity to speak to a doctor? Because we know many people were reporting just finding it very difficult to get to talk to a doctor over the COVID period. And, you know, that time that she was taking the codeine was a time that maybe if she had gone to a doctor, things might have been... Now, you can always play the if game, and I'm very wary about playing the if game because we don't know. But had she spoken to her GP? Was she trying to get in touch with the GP? What was happening there?
Laura was in and out to the hospital with her stomach. She was throwing up. They were exploring her for all sorts of gastroenteritis problems. She was in and out to the hospital. And I don't understand, because we told the medical profession back in 2015 that she was abusing the Nurofen Plus, But this wasn't spoken about when Laura was attending hospital in the last year. And that is the if game, the if and when. Laura was addicted. She made the decision to take them. But I do think there was opportunities missed in the run-up to Laura's death, that if they had known what they were dealing with. The other side of that is Laura never admitted to it. And I think the fact, and I think that is part of the problem, is that these medicines are legal. So the effect that people are taking, they're taking Nurofen Plus, Cocodamol, any of the codeine-based medicines for, is not so, it's because of what they're getting from it. There's clinical trials that have demonstrated that codeine is no more effective than ibuprofen in providing relief of moderate pain. But the codeine, the effect that codeine gives you, which is the same effect that you'll get off heroin or methadone or any other opioid, is that feeling of well-being, that feeling of euphoria and being able to cope with life. And that's an illusion that people have when they take codeine-based products that you buy over the counter. They have that illusion of pain relief because of the narcotic side effect.
Yeah.
And that's the fact of it. That is what's happening. And I think it's clear when I look on social media and the reaction to them speaking about putting these tablets on prescription, it's very clear that there is a problem in Ireland with codeine due to the high level of reaction towards it.
There are calls for a review of the easy availability of these drugs. I know it's been raised in the Dáil by Marian Harkin and by others. You, I take it, would support any call to have these taken away from over-the-counter availability in pharmacies and to be made prescription only?
Absolutely, yes. I think there's two... I understand there's people out there living with chronic pain and there's people living with addictions, and that the cost of going to see a GP is horrendous for a lot of people. But the fact is there's a lot of misinformation, and there needs to be more education about this particular pain relief. This the dependency on Nurofen Plus is it's an illusion. If people were taking paracetamol and ibuprofen, they would have the same effect that Nurofen Plus gives them without the euphoria of the codeine.
Yeah.
That's a fact. And that's where education needs to be done among the public and among those who suffer in genuine pain. It's a societal thing. It's about the healthcare being provided and providing pain management clinics and the right medication and the right investigations. But codeine, I've had a lot of people saying, well, we can't cope without our codeine. And what about alcohol? And what about heroin? The thing is there's no difference between all of them. It's all an addiction that people are coping with. And families, it's documented that 6 in 10 people in Ireland have direct experience of addiction.
Yeah.
So codeine is just part of this. Codeine, alcohol, street drugs, it's all the same. You're getting it's such a class difference in using codeine because you go in and buy it over the counter.
Yeah.
But the person that's using heroin, it's the same effect they're getting. It's that same release from worry and stress and getting to that place of euphoria. That's what they're both seeking, the same thing. There's no difference between it, just that it's acceptable. Alcohol is legal and acceptable.
Karina,
codeine
certainly
is legal and
Karina, you've given us food for thought. We've come to the end of the show. Thank you very much indeed for sharing with us, and we wish you and your family well. You've experienced loss that no one should have to experience, in particular the loss of a sister at 39. It's a sad tale, and hopefully a cautionary tale that people will take on board. Karina, we wish you well, and thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Okay, thank you.
That's Karina there, and that brings us to the end of the 9 till noon show. Thank you to you for listening. Thank you to all our contributors. Very special thanks to Hugh for coming in and sharing with us this morning. I want to say a special thanks to Niamh and to Caroline who took your calls. Caroline produced as well. I'm back tomorrow.